Welcome, listeners, to our patron-requested review of Owning Mahoney.
Mr. Mahoney has just become the branch's youngest assistant manager.
Some folks believe everyone has a public life, a private life.
Give me all the home teams in the National.
And a secret life.
I'm not going to let you bet.
For a few grand?
It's 10,300.
Who's this?
A bank draft.
Are you sure he can handle a loan of this size?
We're going to do another 15 for a cash pickup hike.
He's making some pretty big bets on impulse.
My kind of guy.
He makes $22,000 a year.
Where the hell does he get all the money?
A higher line of credit would be a lot simpler.
Okay.
$200,000.
Hey, Dan, your cash is here. This is $300,000.
$100,000.
I just want you to know that my casino is your casino.
Hi, Dan.
I think there's been a mistake.
Mahoney's coming down with $1.4 million. They just got the transfer.
You got enough to shut him down?
Yeah, maybe.
So Owning Mahoney is a 2003 Canadian film starring Philip Seymour Hoffman, Minnie Driver, Maury Chalkin, one of those two, and John Hurt, based on the true story of a Toronto bank employee who embezzled more than $10 million to feed his gambling habit. Directed by Richard Kwiatkowski.
Kwiatkowski. Well done. Yeah, I had a look at this guy, Richard Kwiatkowski. Is really only directed two movies, this one and Love and Death on Long Island. Have you heard of that one, Hendo?
I hadn't heard of either of these films before watching this.
Yeah, me neither. But John Hurt also stars in Love and Death on Long Island, so there's some connection there.
Fair enough. Music by Richard Grasby Lewis and The Insects, who have done nothing of note.
Shocking.
Moving on from them, cinematography by Oliver Curtis, who the only film I could see that I recognised off his filmography is the UK version of Death at a Funeral.
Okay, yeah, that's a movie.
So Owning Mahoney is based on a real-life incident. Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce clerk Brian Maloney embezzled over $10 million from his employers in just 18 months to support his gambling habit. Maloney's story was told in the best-selling 1987 book Stung by journalist Gary Ross, which formed the basis for the screenplay. The character's name was changed to Dan Mahoney in part because his real name, Brian Maloney, was very similar to the name of the Canadian Prime Minister at the time, which was Brian Mulroney.
Yeah, I just think that's stupid. Who cares about what the current Prime Minister at the time, his name was, get over it. But I'm kind of glad they did change it because Owning Mahoney is a cool title for a film.
Yeah, I kept spelling Mahoney wrong. I went to go look it up on IMDb.
It kept auto-correcting for me to Mahogany.
Owning Mahoney. Go to Antique Roadshow. And while this is not a remake, there is a film from 1984 called The Borrower, which is actually based on the same true story. Have you heard of The Borrower?
Does that have a whole bunch of like little people that hide in the,
No, not that John Goodman film.
Ah.
No. Based on the same true story. That's a bit of a different one. But this did have a limited release in the United States on the 2nd of May in 2003 with a runtime of 104 minutes with a tagline of, to some it's a game, to others it's a habit, but to Dan Mahoney, beating the odds is everything.
It's probably too long, if I had to nitpick.
The other one here is the true story of a mild-mannered banker and his magnificent obsession.
Nope, don't need the plot.
Pretty much. Budget of roughly $10 million, grossed $1.2 million. Not a success.
Ouch.
Yeah, ouch indeed. However, this did receive nominations for Best Picture, Best Performance by a Leading Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Achievement in Music for the Original Score at the 24th Genie Awards. So well done there, guys. Did well.
I was going to say, I don't remember reading that. The Genie Awards.
Yes. Don't know what country that's situated in. Yeah. So the real person on which the character of Dan Mahoney is based is now a consultant for a company that investigates fraud.
Very Frank Abagnale Jr.
Yeah, I was going to say, a very catch-me-if-you-can-like. But let's look at some scores here. The Rotten Tomato critic score have it at a 79%, saying this story of addiction may lack the typical flash and glamour, but Hoffman makes Mahoney compelling. The audience score gives it a 75%. Roger Ebert named Owning Mahoney one of the top 10 films of 2003. He said Hoffman's performance was a masterpiece of discipline and precision, calling him a fearless poet of implosion who plays the role with a fierce integrity, never sending out signals for our sympathy because he knows that Mahoney is oblivious to our presence. What do you think of that?
It's It's a great review from Ebert there.
However, there are some critics who believe that in his self-effacing performance, Hoffman refused to conform to expectation of a typical movie character and that the movie suffered as a result. Time magazine critic Stephanie Zaharik considered him to be a character who squirms right out of our grasp, and despite being the movie's anchor, he's such a vaporous one, he leaves us feeling adrift.
That's harsh. That's who the character is, or at least who the character is that Philip Seymour Hoffman presents.
When asked whether Philip Seymour Hoffman's portrayal matched the real-life Brian Maloney, the journalist who wrote the original book, Stung, said, "Remarkably so. They have the same stocky build, bushy mustache, glasses, slightly unkempt look, and earnestness, and Philip somehow managed to assimilate the psychic essence of Maloney, a yawning emptiness that nothing except gambling was able to fill." Anything there interest you?
I mean, I like that they look the same.
It's that mustache, isn't it?
It is that filthy, filthy mustache.
Let's see. Metacritic give this a 70%. Letterboxd give this a 3.4. And IMDb give this a 7.1 over 12,000 ratings.
I mean, it's pretty solid, isn't it?
It's not bad. It's fine across the board.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is a patron-requested review, and it comes to us from our awesome, awesome patron, Brother Shane. So thank you very much for this one here, Brother Shane.
Thanks, Shane.
All right, then, let's find out what we think of this Philip Seymour Hoffman film. Let's do it. Yep, didn't realize this was a true event when I started watching it, and sure enough,
that comes on.
Yep, based on true events, I'm like, oh, cool, all right.
Yeah, did you like seeing that?
Yeah, you get a little bit more invested into it.
Yeah, it sort of ups the stakes a bit.
Yeah. Like, I know that when it says based on true events, it could literally mean that there was this one character who, you know, like, not everything in this movie has to be true. So I'm just like, okay. But when you have that in the back of your mind, you just think like, oh, all this happened. All this happened. And it makes it much more entertaining.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
Like what they did with
Fargo. No. I mean, if you watch a Coen film and it says true events, then you sort of...
Bullshit.
You sort of know what you're getting into. But I did like the opening credits here. It does set up the, you know, the themes of greed and money and even the surveillance cameras at the bank that we see a lot. You sort of do get a pretty early sense that... I mean, I honestly thought this was going to be a heist film. I knew absolutely nothing going into it. So seeing him, you know, walk in after the credits and... walking into this bank, I was like, oh, here we go. Ocean's 11, eat your heart out. But they do talk about how he's just gotten a raise. It's mentioned a few times straight away. And they say that he was the youngest assistant manager at this bank, which is, you know, obviously true. He was promoted to assistant manager at the age of 26 based on how well he scored on the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce entrance exam.
Well, very, very impressive.
And we do sort of see in this first scene with Hoffman and the bank manager here with his client. Oh, shit. What's her name? Is it Dana?
Yes.
That Hoffman, whilst he's not, you know, an extrovert, he knows what to say to people. And just by sliding this little bit of note over that he is going to get his client exactly what she wants.
But not only that, he's going to get the bank what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he really shows why he got his promotion here pretty quickly. But that all gets pretty much taken away quickly when he starts talking to Frank the Loan Shark.
Yeah, this bookie. I feel like this guy was born to play bookies. It just looks like a heavy.
I remember this guy from Entourage. He played a very, very Harvey Weinstein character in Entourage. Ugh. So much so that they named him Harvey Weingard.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Any, big time producer guy.
Any anything untoward was going on there?
No.
Nah, good. But it is. I like how we start off here with a base amount of, you know, just over 10 grand that he owes these bookies here. Like, that's where he's starting. He's 26, he's been promoted, and it's 10 grand.
That's how it is with these sort of things, because it's like, oh, I'm pretty sure it's a film we did where he talks about how, you know, first off, it was just a tiny little bit. Oh, no, sorry, it wasn't. It was in Bad Education, the movie I watched this year.
The movie I haven't
situation.
Seen.
Yeah, where it's like, start off with one little small thing, and then you can get away with that, and it's no big deal, and then boom, 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 and it turns into this. I must say, if I don't know what you think of this film, but if you do like this film and you did enjoy it, you got to watch Bad Education.
Is Bad Education about gambling?
It's about racking up money.
Okay. It's not like that Spacey movie 21, is it?
That's different completely.
I mean, it's about making money.
that's about cheating the casinos and trying not to get killed over it.
Again, I have no idea what Bad Education is about. So I thought maybe they were educating them on how to beat casinos.
That's what you went to.
I mean, you're saying it had similarities to this, but not so much gambling. It's just about making money. And I'm like, well, you know, the people in 21 didn't think they were gambling.
The similarities with this is that it is a true story about someone who essentially embezzles a shit ton of money over time.
Fair enough. But yeah, very early on, we see, right, Mahoney owes, you know, over 10 grand. So he takes a fake loan out for $15,000 and he's so nervous, which I guess tells you that this is the first time he's done it. Because now that he's been promoted to assistant, he has more access to everything.
Yeah, and he has not as many people over his shoulder, I guess. Like, people just trust him to, you know, he can confirm this check here. He can confirm this money order. It's all fine. He's the big man.
Yeah, and I love this shot because of the shot we'll see later of John Hurt's Victor welcoming this powerful-looking Asian man with the two girls behind him with the security. It's just... yeah, that was great.
I thought it was an interesting shot because you got Mahoney on the side of the stairs, like looking at this guy. I'm like, who is this big shot guy that they're focusing on here?
Yeah, that never and comes back.
He never comes back. Yeah. Finishing up with John Hurt saying the exact same thing to him that he said to the other guy.
Yeah, it really works so well for this film, the complete circle that's going on here. Circle? 180. 180 is probably better.
Is it a 180?
No, it's not a 180.
Because it ends up in the same situation.
Yeah, but it's, you know, from Mahoney's perspective, he's gone from the nobody to the powerhouse in the casino.
The 180 of Mahoney, probably.
Whatever it is, it's brilliant.
Yeah. Anyway, he heads down to the casino and doesn't do well. His girlfriend here, who I didn't realize was Minnie Driver in the first scene, and it turns out it's her in the next scene, she's so forgiving and so nice about everything he does in this film.
Yeah, she does come across as a bit of a pushover. And it's funny, I watched this with Britt and she was having the same reaction where, what is wrong with this girl? Leave this guy. And I sort of said to her, I was like, listen, if I stuffed up, right, and I got in trouble, I was like, you love me, right?
I think there's a difference there.
I was like, you'd stand by me, wouldn't you? And then there was a long awkward silence.
But even he's supposed to take his girlfriend out to dinner here and he calls her up and he doesn't even give like any form of excuses. It's like, oh, I'm just out messing around. Like,
yeah. And I think that's the problem with this relationship where at no point does he ever seem to care about her.
It seems like he's out every weekend for the entire weekend.
Yeah. Because he takes
Friday afternoon after work, he's off.
He has to take a flight to Atlantic City, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like that's not a small deal.
And she's like, yeah, he works long hours. He works, you know, he can go off for fucking, you know, 2 days straight and not come back. Like, Jesus.
Yeah. And I love that you see him at the casino and he loses all this money, right? But he's left with $500 from his $15,000. And when she asks, you know, did you win anything? He's like, oh, sort of. I came home with $500. But he words it in a way that sounds like he won $500 when in fact... he lost $14,500, which bear in mind, his annual salary is, you know, between 22 and 30 grand at this point.
Well, think about it as well. That money wasn't even his and he has really no intention of giving it back either. So for him to take 15K, come home with 500, he's keeping that 500.
Well, keeping it for the next bet.
But he's up 500 in his mind because he has this 500 that he didn't have before.
Yeah, I don't think he sees it like that, to be honest.
That's the way he words it.
But Mahoney here, he tries to place a $30,000 bet with the bookie. So he has just jumped so quickly up now.
I tell you, at this point, I was getting some uncut gem vibes.
Uncut gems, of course, uncut gems. When he's like crawling towards the TV while he's got company over and he's just so desperate for them to win by, you know, more than 2 points. That was just, I got massive uncut gems vibes from that as well.
Yeah. I love how they're like, we need to take a $200,000 loan. So he makes it a $300,000 loan because he's gotten away with everything so far. So why not? He went from, 15,000 to 30, then fuck it, let's go 100,000. No one's questioning him.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be hard not to for this gambling addict. Like, it really would be. The money is there for him to take. It's so easy for him. And, you know, it's sort of, it ends up with him having this argument with his friend because he gives his friend at the casino 40 grand, says, right, this will clear all my debts. You know, he doesn't say that, but take this, no matter what, don't give it to me. And he comes back, he blames a friend for coming over to the table. He's like, nah, you turn that table cold.
And I think this is like, he hasn't shown his friend like this side of him yet. Like his mate is like, what are you doing? Like once he sees all this happen, he just realizes, holy shit, like you need some help. Like, because he knew he had so much money on the table, and for him to come back over and say, give me that money, he's like, holy fuck, did you actually lose all that shit? Holy, like, Jesus Christ, hey, there's a ton of money.
Yeah, it's very sad when he's lost the 100 grand and he's just walking out into that stairwell and he doesn't know what to do, you know?
Yeah.
And I've genuinely felt for him, and maybe not in a sympathetic way, but more if Hoffman conveys that sort of terror, that nervousness, that, oh, what have I done, so well here. But and the then for it like to he... all break when he sees his, you know, his, what is he, waiter friend with the ribs with no sauce that they've just had on standby the whole fantastic. Weekend. That's great.
What I love about this film is it shows how like the tips and like the tricks and the tactics that the casinos do to get them to come back and reel them in with all these things they do. And it's not just in their own casino, but when he goes to Vegas as well, and they're in contact with him over there, like, oh, now, you know, break his legs or something, get him out of there. Like, he's up, let's get him out of there now so he can come back here with the money. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, this is a great casino movie. Like, it's one of those movies where you see behind the curtain of casinos and, oh, it's fascinating. And even here, like, it's not like he's intelligently placing bets. He's no ace from casino. He's calling his bookie and saying, put $1,000 on every underdog in every single game. It's like, holy shit.
He doesn't even know who's playing. He's like, yeah, whatever, just do it. Every single game, I don't care. He's so not willing to admit what he's doing. Like every time someone brings up, you have a problem, what do you do? He's like, just do it. I don't care. Like I'm fine. Just, you know, like even at the start when he does that 10K to the bookies and they're like, you've got a problem. He's like, no, I have a gambling problem. Like I'm fine. Like this is.
Yeah. He has a financial problem.
A financial problem. He's so ready to shut everyone else down. He's like, just take the fucking bet and just fucking move on.
Yeah.
And now he's starting into bearer bonds as well. And there were some points where they were, like when he gets called up to his boss and he's like, oh, how's this going? How's this book going? And he mentions some of this stuff. I'm like, okay, I don't know what you're saying, but the way you're saying it, it's clear that you know exactly what you're talking about to get through this not even investigation. It's just like a catch up on all the loans.
Yeah, his bank boss here, you know, mentions that one of the clients has $1 million in credit that they can withdraw on, and you know his eyes just light up like hello.
And even I don't know if it's here or later on, but when he's like, this guy's had a line of credit with us for like years and has never used it. Now he decides to do it. And his response is, well, maybe he just wanted to have a line of credit there so he could say how much money he's got. It's like, yeah, makes sense. It's like, holy shit. This guy's like, he's thought this through in regards to every loan that he's taking from these people. He has a response to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. But you see Mahoney back at the casino and Victor's sent him some random hooker. And he's like, nah, nah, nah. And Victor loves it. He's just like, this guy does no drugs, doesn't drink, no women. He's like, I love this guy.
He just wants to gamble. But here's where we find out the FBI is onto him. He's like, he's onto Frank. They're trying to, they've tapped Frank's phone calls, and that's how they get to Mahoney. Because they think it's all about drugs.
Yeah, they do. The cop stuff's pretty strange in this.
Yeah, what did you think of the FBI guy?
I mean, it was fine. Like, whatever.
The Tom Hanks of the film.
Because of Catch Me If You Can. Yeah. I mean, it was the weakest part of the film for me. It was funny when they have all the cop cars at the end. I was like, that's pretty amusing. But just side note, what's with the yellow cop cars? Is that how they roll in Canada?
I think so.
I mean, are their taxis not yellow?
Maybe they're white.
Just looked odd. But we're back at Minnie Driver. Now, does she have the worst hair possible that she could come up with for this film?
Yes.
It's horrendous.
Is this set in this is set in the 80s in Canada?
Yeah, 80 to 82. But and this whole sequence where they go to Vegas is very sad. Like him promising that they'll go away so for the weekend.
Like sad, yeah.
And then you realize that, oh my God, they've actually gone to Vegas. Because I didn't realize that his plan was to go to Vegas and gamble. I thought, okay, he's realized he's pushing her a bit too far here. He needs to make it up to her. When they're in Vegas, I was like, fuck me, this guy's out of control.
Yeah, and at this point, I was like, you need to get a clue, woman. Like, he's gone. He's like, I'm just going out for a walk. And just, He's gone. And the way he acts to her when she comes down, he knows. Like when he's saying to her, yeah, just a couple of minutes, just, and then the last time he says it to her, he knows he's just, he's a piece of shit. He's like, yeah, just one more minute. Like he can't even look at her in the face when he says it.
Yeah. And it's made even sadder with when she does go down, she sees the bride there. And she says to him, I thought we were going to get married. Like, it wouldn't have been my choice, but at least it was something.
As John Hurt just fires Barnes because he thinks it was his fault that he went to Vegas instead of coming back to the casino. And then as soon as he finds out, yeah, he's on his way, he's like, yeah, get Barnes back now. And I think that was fantastic at the end. He's like, yeah, this time you really are fired. But he has a big win while he's over there. Massive win.
Yeah, he's up $1 million.
Like, finally, I thought, I didn't know if he was going to make any money at all on this.
Yeah, and at this point, you sort of just think, right, now get out of there. You can take
this
money.
Of course not.
But
it's that Uncut Gems. They're not going to. No way. Gamble it all. And even Minnie Driver, whose character's name is Blynn, but I'm going to keep calling her Minnie Driver here, she's so supportive. She knows that this is where she finds that, yeah, you know, you've got a gambling problem or financial problem, whatever he says. And she's willing to give her all his money, all of her money, to help him out with whatever he needs.
After we've heard the huge amounts that he's lost and, you know, the massive amount that he was up in Vegas. Firstly, how does Minnie Driver not see how much chips he has in front of him?
Maybe she doesn't know.
Yeah, stacks and stacks of chips there.
Maybe they're like $1 each.
For her to be like, listen, we can dip into retirement. It's $2,000. It's like, oh, baby, that's nothing.
Yeah. But he's up all this money. So he pays Frank back and immediately wants to put on more bets. Like, and it's Frank who like baits him into it. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go down to Vegas coming up. He's like, really? Yeah, I'm going to. He's like, put some bets for me. He's like, yeah, all right. He gets straight into it. So the audits are happening at the bank.
Oh, how good is this bit where he walks in, sees the auditor, goes to walk, like turn around and walk away, but someone walks past and then says hi to him. He's like, oh, I've been saying I got to go in.
Yep, got to walk in.
That was great.
But he gets out of this pretty quickly again. He just knows the right thing to say. He's just smooth with this sort of stuff at the bank.
Well, he's extraordinarily lucky that he had this win and was able to pay the account off that morning.
Mm.
Because when this guy comes in, he's like, listen, something's wrong. This guy has no information. Who is this guy? Where's this money gone, et cetera, et cetera. He's just like, oh, don't worry about him. The account's paid in full. It's like, oh, no worries.
Yep, sure. Moving on. Ditching the bowling here. He is so brazen to basically use his parents here to leave without having to have any arguments with Blynn here. And you can see the look on her face. She's like, are you actually going? Like, even she said, like, you don't even want to know the score and he's already gone. So she knows exactly what he's going to do. Yeah. He hasn't changed at all.
No, definitely not. But this sequence here where the kid sees a roll of money in his pocket, I thought this was going to go, obviously, a much different way. They got me so hard with this, where this driver, this guy off the street, picks him up and takes him, then the car pulls up behind him and he starts frantically dumping insane amounts of money on the floor of the car.
Tons of rolls everywhere.
And then to smash cut to him on the couch with Victor, I was like, wait, what happened here? And then it dawned
it's
on me.
Just in his mind.
Nothing happened. He's just paranoid. Yeah. I was like, that was really good.
When you've got that
good,
much money on you in cash. But yeah, he's freaking out. So they set up this offshore account for him. And here, I think this scene here where the bank managers and Mahoney, they go to the Selkirks for this Selkirk account. And in the lift, when they're talking about, they want to push the authorization and milk them for as much as possible. I'm like, this is exactly like the casinos. The banks are just as bad. They are doing whatever they need to do and every little trick and tip to squeeze out as much money as possible from these people. It was like gross, but like great.
Yeah, because you sort of, as they're going in the elevator, I'm thinking, I mean, he's got to be done here. How is this not going to come up that, you know, she thinks she's overspent $500,000.
Yeah.
And here we hear a figure. He's actually taken $5 million out.
But how much does he love it when the managers are like, don't mention numbers? Like, yeah, don't mention numbers. No numbers.
Yeah. But I mean, $5 million is a huge jump from where we thought he was at here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's how much he's done. Doesn't end there because that's just for that account.
Yeah, exactly. It's odd that Minnie Driver doesn't ever get suspicious about where he's getting the money from. Like, she works at the bank with him. She knows, you know, he has a lot more access to this money. Does she not ever put the pieces together here?
Does she know how much he is losing consistently?
I mean, she knows that he spends all his time gambling. like weekends away that he's not at home. At this point, she would know he's away gambling. How does
maybe he takes like $1,000 every time?
He couldn't afford that even, you know, even if he was taking $1,000 every weekend. Crazy. But there's line here where he says to her, she confronts him about something and he says, we'll talk about this tonight. And she says, we both know I'm not going to see you tonight.
Yeah.
Then she goes and buys him a present.
This is where, that was the worst. When he's just like, this is so nice. And she's like, yep, fuck you, I'm going. This is where she does leave here, yeah.
What do you mean?
Like, is she actually done with him at this point? Except for, you know, when he gets arrested, like she comes back. Was she gone?
I mean, I didn't think so, no.
Okay, I thought she was done with it. I thought she'd finally gone, yep, you're done.
No, I don't think so.
We get more talk about this, what is it, $1.4 million stuck at Vegas that they had, that, you know, Frank needs to go and sign for, but he's just not going to do it. And it's so weird seeing you got John Hurt back in Atlantic City talking about how they can get that money to them. And they're talking about, just take the documents to him. Because obviously Mahoney wants the money so he can go gamble. John Hurt wants the money there so he can take the money off of him. And Frank's just like, yeah, I'm not going.
Yeah, but I mean, he eventually does go because, you know, the more gambling that Mahoney does, the better it is for Frank. Although, like, how is Frank benefiting? I mean, obviously he's not benefiting at all from the casino trips.
He's betting on the bookie gambling.
Hmm.
He does it because he wants the 40 grand that he's telling him, like, you need to sign this stuff so I can get the money to give it to you. But he's like, yeah, I can get that on Monday. And that's why Mahoney's like, no, like, fuck, let's do it now. I need the money.
Yeah. I mean, does Frank not realize what he's signing is for 1.4 million, not 40,000?
I don't think he does. He doesn't. I think he thinks it's for 40.
Yeah. How funny was the bit where he goes to buy, he wants the free complimentary bag.
Yeah.
And the woman's just like, it's, you know, $5. And he complains. He's like, really? You're going to charge me $5 for this free thing?
Yeah. Like, any little bit of money, is he needs to get it.
Oh, and then this air hostess on the plane with him, she should get the sack.
Yeah,
like, she's transporting around this high roller gambler to a casino, telling him how bad gambling is. What is her problem?
Yeah, good point. Imagine if you're just like, yeah, you're right. Take me home.
Yeah. She's just like, oh, they must lose lots or I wouldn't have a job. It's like, you're literally talking to the person who loses lots. Stop it.
But I think he mentions Niagara Falls here as well and how he's never been.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, is he actually just flipping cards here for like $70,000? Has he actually just got to that point where, oh, fuck blackjack, I'm just, give me the shoe and I'll roll two cards over each and whoever has the highest or...
No, I thought he was dealing. I thought they were playing blackjack, but he was dealing. He was taking the cards out.
No, because it's never any hit or stays or anything. It is literally, he gives two cards to the dealer, two cards to him, they flip it over, and then he gets a rack for that.
Okay, I'd need to rewatch it, which I'm not going to, but I still think that, because the dealer, there's obviously no choice from a dealer playing blackjack. They hit on, fuck, I don't know the numbers. Whatever number they get to, they have to hit on, and once they reach over that number, they have to stay. So the dealer has no choice in the playing. It's all on him. So I don't know. I'd need to relook at it. I don't think they're just playing. I mean, what do you think they're playing?
I don't know, but then they're not playing blackjack because he gives the cards face down to each person. He picks them up, tosses them over, like he tosses the two cards at him, at the dealer, face up. The dealer turns his cards face up, and then he gets the rack.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're playing blackjack.
Maybe it's closest to 21?
I'm pretty sure that's what blackjack is, mate.
Without hitting and staying and all that shit? You never see him do it.
Pretty sure they're playing blackjack. Shane, help us out. Are they playing blackjack? Yeah, I like the insanely good run he goes on here. He busts the table.
But again, the problem is
the casino has an unlimited buyback, you know? You will never beat the casino. They will always have more money to buy back in. Yeah, he can bust the table, but ultimately he would always lose. But then Bernie here trying to talk him into leaving right in front of Victor. This guy is just heart of gold.
I mean, I think he knows that he's not going to be staying there for very much longer. He got fired for a random little thing. Do you think he's going to be there once Mahoney goes again?
Yeah. But, I mean, he's turned it into $9 million at this point. Care to have a guess what $9 million is by today's standard, Hendo?
$9 million Canadian dollars. Do I have to go,
I mean, it's, you know, US
conversion
dollars.
Rates there too?
It's US dollars.
Oh, yeah. He's in Atlantic City. $9 million in early 80s. I mean, I don't know, like 20?
28 million.
Okay.
She's 40 million Australian.
Yeah. Oh, our dollar value is so shit.
Yeah, I did convert that as well for the lols.
Yeah, but again, he can't help himself. Like, what is his end goal here? Is it, I don't understand. When is he going to stop? Is he actually just going to stop when he loses it all? Like, well,
They talk about it, that the reason he gambles is to make more money so he can lose the money. Like, he just wants to gamble.
Yeah, that's a good analogy from them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's this film.
But it's not his analogy. It's not Mahoney's analogy. He's not like, yeah, I'm going to keep going until I've lost everything. Like, he does mention at the end, like, every time he was gambling, he was like at a 10 on his excitement level.
100, yeah.
Yeah, 120 at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, he doesn't know when to quit and he loses it all. Fucking $9 million down the drain.
It's very sad.
It absolutely is. And then he calls Bryn about it. He's like, oh, do you want to go to Niagara Falls next weekend? Because the last time he said it, he's like, yeah, let's go to Vegas. It'll be fun. And he was only there to go and gamble.
But now
he's mentioning Niagara Falls. He's genuinely wanting to go there now. Is he done with the gambling now? Does he know I've really hit rock bottom
here?
Well,
no, he's not. Because when he does leave the casino and he's having, and Victor gives him the ribs and sauce, Mahoney says to him, see you soon.
Well, there you go.
Like, he ain't done.
And even when he's back in the car and the shade on his car falls down several times, I'm waiting for Mahoney here to like lose his mind. He's not had much emotion in this film whatsoever. And I'm waiting for him to snap that point when he realizes I am the worst and to just go mental. And even here, he doesn't do it.
No,
he never does.
He's a mild mannered person who has an illness.
Yeah, but he gets done by the FBI. They tell him he's under arrest for suspicion of theft over $200.
Yeah, and it'd be a bracket thing. It's probably theft under 200, theft over 200.
Yeah, anything over 200 up to $10 million.
Yeah, interestingly, in the true story, it didn't actually happen like this at all. It was actually the bank that got onto him and organized to have him arrested.
Yeah, but even the bank here, they're like, nah, you got the wrong person. It can't be him. There's no way it's him. And even this Dana girl bails him out. How funny would it be if we sue the bank and then bail him out with the loan?
Yeah, that's good for her.
Yep, Blynn picks him up. They head off to Niagara Falls. And then, yeah, you get all the true story stuff. 6-year sentence, married Blynn. The casino and the bank settled their shit out of court. And they named it, they did a damn Mahoney Day for, was it just that casino that had to be shut down for 24 hours?
Yeah, it was just that casino as punishment. Estimated losses for that one day shutdown, they estimate would be between $700,000 and $800,000 for the one day. Plus, they also did dish out over $36,000 in fines to staff because they knew that he couldn't be legally getting this money. You say 6 years in jail. He actually only served 2.5 years for good behavior.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you got a 6-year sentence.
Yeah, but he did end up marrying Minnie Driver, whatever her name is.
Blynn.
They had kids and they're still together. So good for them.
Yeah. And like I said, he works for insurance fraud now. So that is owning Mahoney. Dean, what's your final thoughts?
Yeah, really, really loved it. Very sad, very depressing, but I really like the simplicity of this story. Like there's hardly any characters and it is all about casinos, banking, and this, you know, horrible, horrible gambling addiction. It's not this fluffy piece. It doesn't have the, you know, high octane energy or anything like Uncut Gems, but it feels very realistic. Like, true story aside, it just feels like a very low key, this could happen story. And I love that the angle it takes, that this Mahoney character, he doesn't ever get sucked into this high flyer life. Like, he's not at all about the hotel rooms, the women, you know, seeing his car fall apart when he's just had, you know, a day before $9 million in his hand is very telling. Hoffman, just perfect as usual. I give it 4 stars.
Awesome. I agree completely with everything you said. I think it was a fresh surprise. I didn't expect this going into this film. Philip Seymour Hoffman is fantastic. The story is just easy to follow. The true story nature of it definitely helps. Obviously, the gambling casino side of it, I love. Just the degenerate nature of it all and just reacting to this character and him not stopping and not seeing the error in his ways is just infuriating, but you've got to keep watching it. John Hurt is great in his role. The whole casino side of it is a major focus of this film and it works really well because it's not just about Mahoney doing his thing here. It's how the casinos manipulate him throughout the whole film. and everything they do there, but not only that, but the contrast to what the banks are doing as well with their big loans and how they're doing almost the same thing. I thought all this stuff was quite fascinating. The way it ends up is like, it's the only way it's going to end. Like, you know where it's going, but that doesn't matter. I found it a really great, entertaining film. 4 stars as well.
Oh, fantastic.
All right. Thank you very much, Brother Shane, for that pick.
Thanks, Shane. That was a good one. So we appreciate that.
All right. Next week's patron requested review comes to us from our awesome patron, David Powell, and he has selected The Salton Sea.
Ah, The Salton Sea.
Another film I haven't heard of.
I can't believe you hadn't heard of it. I know the cover so well. The Val Kilmer film. I think I saw it when I was like 14, maybe 15, probably 14. Remember absolutely nothing about it except the cover.
Well, I'm going to go into it with knowing bugger all about it. So that's going to be interesting. So thank you very much, everyone, for checking out this episode. And we will see you next week for The Salton Sea.
Bye.